That's not my favorite, he said. My favorites were the scary ones. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided to rebrand ourselves and relaunch at the same time the game did with a second edition. Each week we bring you a new dose of strategy insight and all-around geeky goodness. A huge thank you to Fantasy Flight Games, George R. Martin, and our patrons and fans. This wouldn't be possible without you. We have huge plans, and this year we get to enact those. We are going to be co-hosting Game of Thrones Nationals. Learn more at agotnationals.com. Also check out the community site at agot.cards, where you can find tons of community content and an event listing system. Welcome back to the White Book, everybody. This, provided everything goes smoothly and we don't rearrange due to Gen Con stuff, this should be episode 346. We'll see what happens. This is a Kingsguard episode, and we named it because it was planned to have the folks with some of the longest tenures in the game and on the show on this episode, or these episodes. And you know what? We actually have one of those people on this week. How's it going, Kyle?
I was like, it's just me, long-time listener, first-time caller. It's good to be here. I'll just take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Okay, perfect. Doesn't get any easier than that. Oh, well, what else do we have on tap? Patreon. Patreon's been a bit of a mixed bag lately. We've lost a couple folks in July. We've picked up a new one, so... thanks for supporting us, everybody that does. Like I said before,
and if you don't, shame on you.
Yeah, if you don't, you should help out, because you know those proceeds just go back into producing the show and making cool stuff for the community at large. It's not like I'm making a profit off of this. If anything, I'm probably still losing money even with Patreon, because it all gets filed as income on my taxes, so yeah.
I've seen Will's booze collection. He's not making any money on this. battery drinks it all. I'll let him take that one.
Yeah, well, not all of us can have a collection to rival your own, sir.
Hey, I got problems.
Well, let's
clever way to solve them.
99 problems.
99 bottles of beer on the wall.
Oh,
it's a lot of beer.
I'm down below that. I used to be above it. Now I'm below it. I think my highest I've ever had is like 127. Whew. I'm down in like the 60s or 70s right now.
Ooh, you have been making progress.
I've had a lot of problems.
Oh, well. Well, you know, hopefully this is not a problem then to go ahead and turn bit of this back toward the community. We've got another giveaway here for folks, and this time we're going to give another U.S. Nationals entry while we still got time to do that. So go and Reed W gets this one. So Reed, you sir, if you can make it, have free entry to the entirety of U.S. Nationals. So Joust, Melee, and Rookery.
If you are related to Mira or Jojen, you automatically get a bye.
Yes, exactly. It's going to turn out one of his actual cousins is named Mira now, and it's really going to throw us off.
I've never met anyone in my life named Mira, so I doubt it.
Yeah, I don't think I've met anyone by that name, but I know someone with a dog by that name. Does that count?
I mean, Roy specifically named it because of that, so I don't think you have a problem.
They're going the wrong direction with that one.
Hey, former world champion, House Reed lives just up the street. So, are they related?
Ooh.
Do we know?
There we go. So many Reeds, no one knows. Yeah, and of course, I do want to remind people that we had a sweet prize for a white book agenda. As of the time of this recording, we've only had one entry so far, so we may be extending that for a little bit through the week of this podcast. So go look up the post for episode 344, where we announced this sweet, fun contest to design your ideal hypothetical white book podcast, or, well, sorry, just white book agenda, not the podcast. But anyway, you've got a sweet wooden deck box from Dog Knight Games on the line there, so I think it should be fun. About the topic for this week, we were kind of kicking around some different things, knowing that August is going to get a little tricky here. We wanted something that was a little time agnostic, shall we say, or at least more than some of our topics like reviews and so on. So we've got one now that was a kind of a nugget of an idea of Scott's that I massaged ever so slightly so that it was something I felt we could come back to and tackle again another time in kind of a deeper take. But from a top-level perspective, what are we talking about this week, Scott?
Our favorites and least favorites. And hit mine has a lot to do with saves for least favorites.
Every one of your least favorite cards is going to be a save, isn't it? Calling it now. Ah, man. Well, okay. So
saves are pretty shit.
Ah, man. That sounds like a t-shirt slogan. We'll get you one made up or something. Just says, saves are shitty. It'd be great.
We should get custom sleeves made for our cards.
That would be really fun. You may not be able to use it at official FFG events. But
why not? They're sleeves.
I'm going to bet that profanity is covered somewhere in
what if we just put asterisks horrible on the vowel?
Maybe that might work. We'll see.
We'll see how we're gonna see.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we could do like five and then a pound sign and then an exclamation and like a plus sign. I think that would work.
Maybe. So,
that's very hip these days.
Oh, well. I don't actually really think it is. I think it was hip about 15 years ago, but, you know.
Will's a hip guy.
Yeah, yeah. A borderline hipster, judging by beard choices and facial hair. And my love of flannel. You know what? Let's not dwell
to be
on
a square
this topic. How about we take a look at some of our favorite and least favorite cards? So what we're gonna do this week is we're gonna go card type by card type. So this is gonna be regardless of faction, neutral, or anything, just overall favorite and least favorite. What the criteria is for those considerations has been left up to each host individually. So I'm sure we will discuss that a little bit as we hit each of. So, we're going to do these by card type alphabetically, which sends us to agendas first. So, since this was your idea, Scott, why don't you lead us off? What is your favorite agenda?
My favorite, in theory, is House with the Red Door, but I think it was nerfed too much in Second Dead, even though I didn't play First Dead. The agendas are still fragile with things like Raiding the Bay of Ice and Breaking Ties and whatever. So, but it's still my favorite because it is the most interesting without being OP.
Gives a lot of build options compared to virtually anything else. All those unique locations. I like it.
And yourself, Will?
Me? I went with Reigns of Castamere. It's one of those cool things that kind of, like, when I read it, it kind of really tripped that Shaga trigger, so to speak, because it was this, like, big, crazy, outside-the-box effect. I mean, sure, even when it was first announced and people were looking at it, it raised a lot of Jamie flags, but what really got me was, like, I've never seen anything else in the history of the game that quite did something like that and gave you this separate plot deck and cool stuff to do with it. I also thought it was balanced reasonably well compared to some of the other agendas, which shall not be named, but make up 50% or more of the field right now. Where, like, is good. Sorry, what's that?
I was going to say, I don't think that there's a big balance problem with the agenda that makes up over 50% of the field right now. I just think it, as Roy would say, it homogenizes the game because it's just like a safety net that's generally good.
But it does.
The only thing that makes it broken is the Martell used plot stuff, but I think that's also part of plot cancel. This is an entire another discussion.
Yeah. I didn't want to go huge down that. I just wanted to say that conversely, I feel like Reigns of Castamere hits some of the same notes in plus sides, right? Gives you more versatility with your plots, but it has a built-in, like meta-wide kind of balancing factor in that the more of those Reigns decks you see in the field that are hitting intrigue hard, like the more awkward it gets because of those mirror matches, and it gets harder to push your own intrigue through. And sets up with situations where if you kind of like under push, then your opponent gets their trigger instead of you getting it, and like it kind of polices itself.
I really hate that. I hope this is not an omen of things to come, but I agree with Will. My favorite was Castamere, just because I thought when it came out, it did something different to deck building. It wasn't just like a resource agenda or something that dealt with what happened on the field, and I like those type of agendas. And then, like, to be a hypocrite and break my own rule, my least favorite was Wars for a lot of the same reasons. It homogenizes things. It on some level becomes very, I don't want to say bland, but it's just like, hey, good players, now you have three extra slots to pack some silver bullets and utility, and like that's the end of it. So I liked that Castamere creates more what I think are creative plays during the game. Obviously there's creativity with plot picking, but it felt like a breath of fresh air when it came out, and I'm grateful for that. And Wars, I don't think it's like bad or an overpowered agenda, but I do think it creates a blah feeling that I don't think, you know, people want.
All right. So since we got your least favorite, Will, what's your least favorite? We'll snake it.
Sounds good. My least favorite actually is Kings of Summer. I mean, not only have the seasonal agenda kind of pushed out of the meta, but I feel like that effect is the most boring effect of any of the agendas in the game. Even another econ agenda, like, say, Fealty, right? There's this balancing decision-making process about can I afford to play any other Kneel My House card effects in my deck? If I do, like, which one is the proper one to trigger this round, and so on. Kings of Summer, though, is literally just like a make more money plot. But the thing is, it requires you to play Summer plots, which are already the big money plots in the game. So you already have big income. It doesn't do anything new or interesting or expand that. It just says, hey, you, sir, have a lot of money. Would you like even more money? And I just think that's really boring. Really boring. How about you, Scott? Unless either of you guys have a rebuttal to that Kings of Summer.
I mean, Cyrus, I'm mute. I very much disagree. Well, this will be airing post-Gen Con, right? So I, between all of us, I trust you guys in good faith. I will be taking Kings of Summer to Gen Con. So I have taken Kings of Summer to Gen Con. And Reserve is also a thing. Plus, Exchange Information made Summer pretty sweet.
I mean, I'm not necessarily saying my least favorite means it's bad. I should clarify that. It just means I don't like it.
Fair enough. Well, my least favorite, if you couldn't guess it, is Banner Kraken.
Because it has saves? Is that why?
You could... Bannering Iron Mines is just stupid. And for a while, it was like the best agenda there was because you could banner to Iron Mines.
Well, and Victarion too, really.
Yeah, Victarion and Asha, Little Theon. But yeah, being able to just banner to saves for your big dudes, no. This doesn't take the game anywhere interesting. It just says saves are good. Let's save things. Yay, saves. It put the game in a pretty boring spot, and I don't like that. I like the game to create decisions and create things. And clearly that is not done by Banner Kraken.
Weird. I like Banner Kraken. I think it's a fun one because it gives me some really good answer cards. It gives me Triss and Newly Made Lords, which are really great.
Oh, that's another card I hate. I hate Newly Made Lord as a card.
Really? Oh, I love it.
Point and click. You have to earn things, man. You should be able to have to earn it.
We're definitely on opposite sides of that particular agenda.
I'm pro Kraken. I think Greyjoy does a lot of neat things as a toolbox, whether that's the saves or the stealth. I like that Banner Joy a lot. Sorry, Scott.
It's fine. Ooh. Let's just ban Iron Mines.
I mean, I can go on about, you know, sometimes saves being bad.
No, I think
is just fine.
I think just they're inappropriately costed, and they probably should be loyal. But that's just me. Anyways. Let's go to the next card type. Do you want to start it, Kyle? Do you want to talk about your favorite attachment?
I would love to. All right. Oh, shit. Okay. My favorite attachment I put down was Marriage Pact. And you'll kind of notice a theme with all my cards. I like things that are interesting and create unexpected plays on the board in the middle of the game. So that's what drew me to Reigns. That's why it draws me to this one. I think it's a neat concept with the sacrificing a character, but you steal one. I like that it's not so point and click, that there is a drawback, and there is clever plays you can set up there. I don't know. It was interesting. Like, when it first came out, I thought it was interesting, and it was different. I'm not saying it's great, but I think it's better than just like Ward when it says like you're mine now. Like, I dig its twist.
It's funny you ended with that thought, Kyle, because Ward actually was my choice. I like it, you know, from a flavor perspective relatively well, but I think there's kind of this cool decision point here, this gamble. You know, do you just take their best character and then try to kill it as quickly as possible? Your opponent then, you know, maybe doesn't make a military. Do you immediately march to the wall or something to get rid of it? Or, you know, is it a good enough character that you try to hang on to it for a turn or two? But then you're running the risk of Ward getting discarded and they get it back. I think there's a lot of cool avenues for play there with Ward. So that one's my choice.
I had Locked Away as my favorite. I'm not saying it's the best card, because it isn't, but first of all, Cannot Be Saved is awesome, in case you didn't know. But also it creates this dichotomy that I think is good and interesting. If you don't expect Confiscation, for instance, to be in the meta, then automatically Locked Away becomes an amazing card, right? Because the downside of Locked Away is it's the start of Marshalling, so you're waiting a turn. But it creates a dichotomy in the game where you have to play around your opponent's game and plots, which I think is interesting, and plots are the game within the game, right? So if you think they aren't playing other plot heat and they just have one Confiscation, then you could theoretically play around it with their Locked Away and put their mace back to hand and reset it, and it doesn't matter everything it has on it. So unlike something with Gaston where they have to walk into it, they don't have to walk into Locked Away. It could just be there. So that is why I had Locked Away. And my least favorite is kind of the opposite. It's Sandsteed. Because I hate you not having to earn power, like to do something to earn it. Just I played a summer plot, and it went when I used plow, so I got a power. That's stupid. And you shouldn't do that. It shouldn't be a thing. You should have to earn it, or at least there'd be some way to play around, vice versa. There's nothing you could do to play around Sandsteed. It just gets power just, you know, by existing.
If I can just jump back to your favorite card for just a sec, I do just want to say that it's also had new life breathed into it by the trading cohort agenda.
Cohort?
Yeah.
Yes, cohort is very good for it.
Yeah. Let you do some super cool stuff. That was my main response.
Cohort is a very good agenda.
Yeah, it does really cool stuff.
What about you, William? What is your least favorite? Do you hate the Sandsteeds too?
No, I don't. You know, honestly, this is probably going to surprise some people, but it's Milk of the Poppy. I really feel in second edition that at one cost, it is way undercosted for what it does. And, you know, in first edition, you know, any veteran of that game of the CCG will tell you that the game was basically all balanced around Valor Morghulis. I think there's a strong argument to be made that all of second edition has wound up being balanced on the existence of Milk of the Poppy, which I really kind of despise. So there you go. Not that I'm saying it's not necessary at this point in the game, but I just wish it hadn't gotten to that point to begin with.
Hey, you know what Milk of the Poppy is great against? You know, saves. Looking at you, Scott. Trying to keep you.
I mean, it saves on Victarion, I guess.
Yeah.
That's right.
Good try. What's your least favorite then, Kyle?
I went with Hota's Axe because I have terrible luck with it, and it always seems to be used at dumb times. I don't know. At first it's like, oh man, this is gonna be free. I'm gonna jump it. You know, the thought is obviously Hota put his axe on him, like, oh shit, now I got this big beefy mill icon. But like, that's one play, and it always ends up being kind of underwhelming even when it happens. I've never been glad to have this in my hand, ever. So yeah, it's just me being a little jaded. But I suck with it, so here's my chance to stick it to a card.
I seem to remember back when that preview article came out and we were talking about that attachment, that you knew even back then that you were going to win.
It just strikes me, like, I just knew. I'm like, this is a card that's going to suck me in and then just freaking suck. And kind of does.
All right, so William, you haven't started yet.
Ooh.
What is your fave?
So this is on the characters, right?
Yes.
All right. So my favorite character, this one may or may not surprise people, is Corset Tyrion Lannister. I mean, yes, I acknowledge in the early, you know, like cycle one meta, he was kind of above the curve, but that has very much evened out since then. And I think he's got a great, you know, hits the flavor nail on the head. He ties together a couple different Lannister themes in a fun way, and in intrigue and money. He's interactive because in order to use him, challenges have to be made yours or your opponent's or both. Getting that extra gold in the challenge phase now ups that uncertainty and that guessing game of, you know, will you, for your opponent anyway, will they play, you know, some other effect? Can they ambush something in? Back and forth. Like, I think he just encapsulates a lot of what I really enjoy about Thrones. So, Tyrion.
Kyle, what about you?
I went back and forth on this a lot. And I settled, and I hate myself for it, at Begging Ooh. Brother as my favorite. Because I think it's a healthy card for the game. There are cards that I think are wardens of ridiculousness, and I think Begging Brother is one of those cards. So, like, he's nothing super flashy, but I think it's real solid, really good, and it does a lot for the meta by existing and being neutral.
No, I think that's good. So I have Dornish Spy because I like tricks, and it's the tricksy character that you bounce in, take an icon, get a good body, make sure your opponents stay on their toes, and I like that. My least favorite, if you couldn't guess by Sandsteed, is Mace.
Oh.
Because you don't earn it. Earn it. Earn your power. Even if it's defending the wall, you're at least having to defend.
Hey, I have to remember to trigger things in the right order.
Mace, I'm not saying it's not a skill card, but it isn't an earn it card.
Oh, okay. What about your least favorite, Kyle?
Ooh, this was there's just such a large pool. It's so hard to do this.
You have so many you hate.
I debated. Yeah, I actually had a much larger pool of these are dumb cards to whittle down than I did good cards that I wanted to raise up. And like New Danny's good. I'm like, that's a dumb conversation. So I was torn. I'm going to cheat and give it to two. I give it to the Mountain because I've always hated the what does Schoenthal call it? The like Lannister Casino Royale theme.
Yeah, the lotto. Oh, I hate it.
Agreed. Or Castella. It's terrible. Yeah. There's nothing quite like that. The feeling of getting beat by that.
Yep. So like him and the Tickler and anything involved in that just riles me up. The other thing that I said is King Rob's Host, that big dumb 8-cost army out of Stark. Because I see, and this is something that I really just want to talk about this topic at least a little bit. I feel like this is a card that draws new players in that's bad, and it causes them to struggle at first when they're getting into the game if they don't have people there to shepherd them. Because they go, oh man, look at this big awesome army with this power stealing. I'm going to run this card and it's going to be great. And then it sucks and they get upset. Especially
not a bad card.
It gets... I don't like it.
There's some
it's 8 gold.
There's some good decks playing it now. But also remember, Aegon is out now. He's good with Aegon. He can have attachments if you're worried about Night's Watch, Kraven, and BS like that. There are some good Stark builds right now playing it. And I'm not just saying that. Like, it's caused me issues playing against it. Like, it's okay now. It was a bad card.
Oh, well.
But there are some builds now that really use it and use it well.
Well, I stand corrected. But yeah, so I guess previously bad cards. Point is, like the casino theme, I'll say all of these kind of like trap cards that look real flashy, that draw new players in, that aren't good. Like, I don't know why those cards sometimes exist. And for a long time, I had a lot of newbies. Like, whenever I'd go meet up, like, teach games, A, they want to play Stark because they're new, and the show, and or the books, and then they see this and they're like, oh yeah, it's obviously awesome. Like, why would it be 8 gold if it wasn't way better than all their other stuff? Which is obviously a flawed way of thinking. But they're new, so that's why I picked it as like a, why do you act like a Pied Piper of new players?
I mean, I think I probably would say that type of card is a necessary part of a card game. Because it serves two purposes. One is the one you mentioned there, which is to catch new players' eyes and get them excited. But then the secondary purpose, like, as any player grows and gets better at a game, like, their kind of their evaluation process for cards has to improve too. And they have to, you know, grow to that point where they can evaluate that card and say, you know, it's not as good as I thought. Which is a valuable lesson.
Yeah, I agree with you, Will, on this one. I think, first of all, if I didn't think it was a good card, I'd still think if they want to think it's good, let them learn that it's not good. And then eventually they'll learn why it's not good, you know? I think that's important. It's a lesson.
Yeah. As long as they don't actively, like, feel bad about, oh, man, like, I'm terrible or this sucks. You know, I can't do exactly what I want. Which, you know, there's a certain level of player personality that can or can't take that revelation that, you know, all their favorite ideas when they were brand new probably aren't going to be the best ideas going forward. Well, maybe that was a downer. Maybe we should move on to the next card type.
What a heartwarming tale.
Indeed. Well, how about events? Those are heartwarming, right? I swear my choices are very heartwarming.
Oh yeah, always.
Who's up first on it?
I will say though, nothing crushes hearts like events. Like if there's a NPE in a game, it is always events. Or Fear of Winter. Let me clarify
yeah.
that. Besides that, it's always events. And the first time you learn that Valor Morghulis is a card.
Oh boy.
So I guess plots and events. I'll say plots and events. So I'm glad those are the last ones. But yeah, nothing breaks hearts quite like them.
Okay, so who's supposed to be up on, first on events? Is this back to Scott?
Is it? I'll start. My favorite is the new gift. It hasn't been made good yet, but it is versatility and creating an archetype, which I think is very good.
I'm very confused. Shouldn't events be next before locations if we're going alphabetical?
Oh, sorry.
Spoiler alert!
My favorite is the...
Yeah, why am I talking about events? I don't even know.
My favorite is the Iron Man Glove to do, because I like tricks, and I like money.
Yeah.
And I don't like Confiscation being an auto-include. And if you really don't want to auto-include, and you're worried about attachments on your characters, and you're not in Tyrell, so you don't Blessed by the Maiden, you can always have the Iron Bank.
I dig it. It's very versatile, but still you know, has several balancing factors built in. Well chosen. Does that kick it over to me? This is probably another one folks are going to hate.
Kick it.
I'm going to actually choose Treachery, just because I love it. There's nothing quite like that feeling of security when you know you're setting on a Treachery. And plus, like, it's just super flavorful, I think. It hits a lot of Nidalee flavor value for me, so...
I feel like I'm just piggybacking Will. I went with the Hand's Judgment for a lot of similar reasons. The other being that I really like that it is cost X, as opposed to just being like a one gold, like cancel whatever. That if you're afraid of this big four cost mega event lurking in the shadows, you have to save that four gold for it. I'm also like, as the opposing player, you know, it's frustrating to be like, oh yeah, I did this thing and it costs like six gold for this event, and they just like one off, just boop, gone. So the fact that they have to, that this scales with the monetary investment, I think is brilliant. And I think again, it's super great for the game. Like, you need this, because I agree with Will, no one should ever feel safe about any action. Like, they know for sure it is going to happen, and Hand's Judgment puts that doubt for all events being played. So I like it.
Okay, I can dig it. I almost chose Hand's Judgment for mine, so yeah, we were of a very similar mind there. Well, if we snake it, that sends it back to you for least favorite, doesn't it?
It does. So I have a sticky mute button apparently. I went with an oldie but a goodie. It's not that old. There Are No Men Like Me. Just because this really pisses me off, because it's a Jamie Lannister quote, and then it makes everyone like Jaime Lannister functionally.
It's
and
very
that just seems
the effect
really
is
dumb.
Opposite of the title, basically.
Yeah, it's make someone make a man like him, and it just it's like why? Like this is such a cool name for an event, and then. And I'm not even like upset with the event. Like that's a fine ability. Like cool, make that card. I just hate that. It's just for whatever reason one of those nail on the chalkboard moments where it's like, why did we hit the one thing we shouldn't have hit with this one thing? Julia. So is that a little frivolous? Sure, but it does bother me a lot, far more than it should.
Yeah, Kingslayer. Kingslayer sounds like it might have some use now that Kohor is a thing.
It's now not the worst card in the game.
We'll have to do a little searching to find what is actually the worst card in the game now.
Kohor doesn't make it good, though. It still isn't good. But I don't think Lanny Kohor is good.
That's a whole other topic there, too.
William, what are your thoughts?
Mine is going to be very interesting, considering my favorite and the fact that my runner-up favorite was the Hand's Judgment. Because my choice for least favorite is actually Someone Always Tells, which is another cancel card. So I go straight from feeling that one is awesome and evocative and fun to saying this other variation is terrible and bad for the game. And I think that's due to the fact that it hits plots. You know, something like Treachery, while it can be game changing and swinging, you know, even something as simple as, say, canceling Asha's ability to stand back up, or, you know, something mundane like that can really swing a challenge phase. You might do stuff like that. But on any of these in-play sorts of cards, you generally get multiple opportunities to keep triggering them over a game. But something like Someone Always Tells that shuts down plot, due to the way plots are structured, like that was probably your opponent's one chance at that. Their only opportunity all game to do that. And I think it's a real feel bad, as well as disrupting people's ability to use plots to claw back into games. I feel like it's more of a kind of nail in the coffin card rather than its own kind of equalizer, and I don't feel like it's good for the game. I mean, it's a good card, yes, it's strong, but I don't think it's good for the game.
I agree with you, and that's my least favorite too. The game is fundamentally balanced around the idea of resets, and when you take out the fundamentally balanced part of the game being resets, then you fundamentally unbalance the game. As you mentioned earlier today, the game in First Day was balanced around Valar Morghulis. While it might not be the same extent powerful in this edition of the game, it still is a driving force of what makes this game. And why the game works is because of resets. The game just doesn't work without resets.
Yeah.
Because then it's just who can play the biggest guys and who can get the most power on one guy and whatever. It's not an interesting or fun game, and this fundamentally changes the balance of the game and not a way it should work. So I agree. Who's next? I believe Kyle. What is your favorite location?
Favorite location? I feel like I was... Okay, good. So I was reviewing my list, and from when I felt like I was being a fanboy, but I think my house is a pretty balanced. I went with Lannister's Harrenhal. I think by itself, it's a neat twist, and I liked the deck archetype that came out of it with all of the jumping in and out. I didn't think it was – I mean, obviously there was a combo sort of setup that grew from that a little bit, which then quickly faded to real combo. But I liked the deck, the game interactions that it created. I thought it was neat. So for a four-coster that didn't create like terribly negative experiences, I thought, you know, well done. Well done on making a four-cost location that doesn't piss people off.
Hmm. I think at different points in the game, it has pissed people off, but I was one of the people playing it at the time, so I guess maybe it affected me less. So, I mean, I'm a fan. Who has the next location? Is that over to Scott?
Sure. My favorite location is the New Gift. The New Gift creates versatility in the game. It hasn't been very good, but it can create a new deck archetype. Obviously, Builders was a popular archetype, and there was a Steward's Rats Cook deck for a while. But versatility in the way you play and a different way of playing the game is obviously strong and should be applauded. And I applaud the new gift.
My choice is probably going to be a little bit controversial. Mine is actually going to be Astapor. I think it was one of the more interesting uses for Bestow, you know, that we saw as a mechanic. The scalability does cool things with that mechanic. I thought it was, you know, very worthwhile of an effect for that investment if you go all out. But on the flip side, you know, it has some balancing factors like Bestow, like cost that make that investment, you know, kind of risky. I think it does a lot of cool stuff. It is really neat from a design perspective, even if I'm sure it bugs a few people in actual gameplay.
Yeah. Just a few, though.
Probably not as many these days as it used to be.
I agree.
Let's see. I guess that sends me over to least favorite, then. Here's the opposite end of that scale. Here's an expensive location that does drive people up the wall. That's going to be Dorne. I think it just does a lot for gold, so to speak. Okay, 4 gold isn't a little, but it just does a lot and provides a kind of frustrating level of card advantage and kind of surety that people will see what they want with all that filtering, because it's the sort of thing that's very hard to play around, because, you know, unless you're sitting there with a Night's Watch wall deck or a mace deck, like, you need challenges to win the game. So, like, you just trying to win the game fuels that. Sure, that's a Martell theme, but I feel like this one pushed it too far.
I agree, and I think there should be a limit on things. I don't know why we don't have a limit on everything yet, but we don't. And that leads to problems like Mace and the Hightower, which is my least favorite card. Because more than just cards, you're getting gold too that will let you get more guards and more gold. And it's not like there isn't enough draw and enough gold already in the house, but it just is too much, and you don't earn it.
See, I considered that for a little bit, but then I thought, well, Hightower at least does have a built-in cap of some kind. Well, okay, so does Dorne with a total number of challenges.
So how many phases are there in the game? So there's plot, draw, marshalling, challenge, dom, stand, tax.
Well,
so the cap is 7.
It's not quite that. You also have to have money for the cards you want to get into play. So there, even though it does provide you some,
or you can have a mace trigger,
or mace, correct. But that's, you know, kind of a separate issue, I think.
I agree with Scott. Hightower was my least favorite. I think it just does. It took Tyrell to a dumb place. Now Tyrell does dumb things. And it could be a house that's so clever and cool, and instead we just have Mace and Hightower, and then stupid. And it sucks seeing one card kind of whittle away creativity. Well, depending on how you define that. But by my, you know, selfish definition, it whittles away creativity. So, yeah, I'm Team Scott. Sorry, Will.
Okay, that's fine.
Will, what's your favorite plot?
Ooh, my favorite plot. This one probably surprises some people. I'm going to go with nothing burns like the coal. I'm a big fan of the stat line. I think it's a very interesting punishment kind of effect to make people actually worry and consider about their early turn plays. I like that it's the kind of plot that gives you some outs to build your deck to avoid the downside if you want. But doing so is its own kind of downside. I like that it gives some attachment control that's not just everyone playing Confiscation. I think it does a lot of cool stuff in play and in the metagame. So shift the order over to Scott.
My favorite plot is Marched because it's the plot for attrition, and it is a fair trade, but it does so much, and it gets past dupes. All these are great things.
That's what really sold you on it, isn't it? The fact that it cannot be saved.
I mean, cannot be saved is always good.
No, I can dig it.
I went with Varus's Riddle as my favorite. I really like counterplot scenarios, for lack of a better way to describe that. Stuff Ooh. Where like you are consciously thinking about what they're going to play and you have a direct reaction to it. My favorite plots in First Ed were that way. Favorite plots in the CCG were that way. So I like the cool interactions that this plot has with others, especially being a scheme. I chose Reign's my favorite agenda. Like, this feeds so well into it for cool plays that can happen. I think it's a neat way to go about it. I really dig it.
Great choice, Kyle. You almost convinced me to change mine. I mean, you picked one that like takes the most unique mechanic of Thrones, plots, and then just like amps it to another level and really plays around with that. So, well done.
Then kicks to me the least favorite. Least favorite, I put Alex Hines's Annals of Castle Black. I feel like it kicked off what for me was a very dark phase of Thrones, and I feel like the game has never gone back to not being
your least favorite.
Putting together combos. It's way better than it was, but like, this came out and it's like, oh, isn't this gonna be fun? And even at first, like, I was like, oh, this is cool, this will be neat, and then it took no time at all before heavy combo on the backs of this plot became the deck du jour, and that's just not my bag. I've gotten on here and gotten real negative and shitty about combo. I could very easily do it again, but long story short, I blame this. I blame it real bad. So, curse you, you darn Canadian. I just wish it wasn't so nice.
makes it hard to really resent him, doesn't it?
I don't care how nice he is. This plot did harm for the game, but I think he realizes it. But anyway, I think I'm in a similar path as you. First of all, I think plots like that and plots like what I'm going to say, as we discussed with Hightower and Dorne, are reasons why we need limits on things in this game. But anyway, not to rant, my least favorite is Littlefinger's Meddling, because there is no limits, and it's basically infinite gold and creates infinite draw combos, which is not good for the game. There needs to be limits on things, and gold should not be an infinite resource. It should be a finite resource. And Littlefinger's Meddling says that is not a finite resource. And finally, Will, what is your least favorite plot in the game?
Yeah, I find this one kind of interesting because you guys picked least favorites based on basically having an absurdly high power level. I went the opposite direction on plots, and I picked one due to its absurdly low power level, and that is Marching Orders. It's kind of like one of those ones. Well, it's maybe a little bit, I suppose, like Kyle's comment about the Stark army and characters, which means maybe I'm switching sides of the argument here, but whatever. Marching Orders looks really cool at first, the huge income, But with that giant penalty of not being able to play anything except for characters, like it's a plot that started bad and only gets worse as the game goes, right? As more locations and attachments and cool events and stuff enter the game, that penalty only hurts you so much worse. And the reserve is so low, you can't like sit on a pile of those to play next turn. It's just terrible and getting even more terrible with every chapter pack. So that's my least favorite.
Cool.
Let's hit a little props and slops then.
Well, actually, first, Kyle, let's hear about all these Aya Worlds stuff.
Oh, man. It's so early for that.
Or let's not.
No, it's weird because I always, in previous years, Aya Worlds has always happened because people couldn't make Thrones because it was during the week. So Aya Worlds happened on the weekend of Worlds. This year, after all the success that fellow co-hosts like Jesse Carpenter had with his name day tournament, he credits a lot of that to how early he was able to get out and get information to people so that they could plan that trip. And it helped. And I tend to agree. So Aya Worlds is currently in the very infantile stages of this year. We do have some prize support coming together. A lot of exciting things I want to announce. But I kind of want to hear from the community if you are interested in attending this event. Would you like to see it on a weekend different than Worlds so that we can announce rather soon and you can start planning that trip to Iowa? Or do you like the thought of it being the weekend of Worlds so that, and this is the big caveat, because of course they won't announce till an insanely late date. If Thrones is earlier in the week, you now can go do Thrones, let's say Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, up in Minnesota, and then drive down for a Saturday event, or some combination of the two. Downside to that, obviously, being if they, you know, finally get their act together and put Joust on Saturday, now Thrones, Aya Worlds is on a different weekend, and we're scrambling. So lots of choices, a lot to think about, but if you are interested in hearing more about this event, or would like to weigh in one way or the other, shoot us a line on any of our social media platforms, and we'll be sure to get it to me, and your voice will definitely be heard. So we'd like to get as big a turnout as possible, and that starts with doing what is easiest and best for the community.
I think that sounds like a great plan.
Yay, community.
Well, speaking of the community and all that sort of thing, if I might slip an additional little tournament nod in here. We've been looking at doing a lot of cool stuff for U.S. Nationals, and we've got a little bit more in the works as of the time of recording. But if you guys are interested in coming, please do me a huge favor and pre-register on the website. That's www.agotnationals.com. So we have a good count of folks to have enough prizes and different goodies around. Right now we have 45 players actually registered, and knowing how these things are, I'm going to guess there's another 10 or so that are planning on coming that will just show up. So 50 plus people. I think it's going to be a good time. There's a lot of sweet prizes on the line. So add to that. And props and slops? Or continue props
yes.
and slops? I don't know. Maybe that stuff was all part of props and slops.
I will prop Sharp Objects, HBO's new miniseries, based on the book by the same author, or by the author of Gone Girl. And it has that same sort of feel to it. So if that was your jam and you're like, regardless of you read the book or the movie, either one, ordered both. The show stylistically feels very similar. Obviously, very different plot. This one seems way more gritty, but really is gripping me. I really like it. And, you know, it fills the weeks till the next season, which is, you know, 40 billion weeks away. So, passing the time. Woohoo!
Nice. Woo-hoo. And it takes place in Missouri, right? So, I'm a fan of that.
It does. It does not paint it in the best of pictures, Will. But yes, it does take place in small town Missouri.
We never get painted in a good light. We have such lovely representations as sharp objects, Ozarks, it's just Ozark, and Winter's Bone. So, yay.
Well, I'm glad you can appreciate
humor in it,
Will. Oh, none of those are funny. Yeah, have you watched any of those?
They're not good. Well, they're good, but they're not. Missouri is apparently a very miserable place. And I'll say that my last prop is I saw three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri. And it was phenomenal.
Oh, that too.
It was definitely worthy of all the awards it's won. I really enjoyed it. If we're looking for more Missouri's a miserable place props.
Exactly. How did I forget that one? It literally has Missouri in the name. Oh, my. Slops to the media representing Missouri terribly. I swear there's good stuff here, too.
I don't know about all that. It seems like it's pretty. FFG wouldn't let me put the name on a sleeve.
Wise. Well, I'm going to throw out a prop as well, then. I'm going to prop Cloak and Dagger. It's been a really good show. Way better than a Freeform should have. I really enjoyed it to get my Marvel fix lately. And in this last episode 8, they actually had a little tie-in nod to Luke Cage, which I thought was really cool. I wondered if the various shows would just sit in their respective silos or what. So it's good to see that they did connect. Even if it's small, it's all connected.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Anybody else got anything? I mean, I've got some others. Also,
anyone have anything else?
Ant-Man and the Wasp. Keep it on Marvel note. Super fun. I like to think that Paul Rudd as Scott Lang is essentially what I would be if I had superpowers. So, yeah. I highly recommend it.
I mean, you don't have superpowers? Superpowers.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Sounds like a nice thing to have.
I mean, we're not going to really sit here and analyze which ones, because that's, you know, at least two podcasts worth right there. But we would definitely take superpowers.
Superpowers sound good.
You wind up creating supervillain stuff. You end up in the danger zone, and it's really terrible.
Well done.
Womp womp.
Yeah, well, also, you know, Scott had no props or slops to add, so I figured I should just end it.